You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, your mom's favorite D&D podcast. Today, Josh and I are going to be talking about source books and also some other random stuff that we kind of thought of. This one might be a little more scattershot than usual. I went and got
a lot more scattershot.
I went and got Spelljammer. I picked up Spelljammer. My crew has finished the first arc of our campaign and decided to do something a little strange in that I set up a bunch of options for how they can handle the MacGuffin, right? I've got this big MacGuffin kicking around that they've been chasing after for the whole game. Okay. And now that they have it, I was like, cool. So here's a very secure bank that you could possibly put that into. Mm-hmm. And here are some very trustworthy people that you could maybe deliver that to.
Mm-hmm.
And their takeaway from that was, let's go to space.
Not my first instinct when presented with a bank to rob, but okay.
No, we're going to go to space, and we're going to drop it in a volcano on Kryn.
Sorry?
They want to go to space, and then go to Kryn, and then drop the magical doodad in a volcano on a planet they don't care about.
Okay. So I have concerns about this plan, but go on.
I also have some concerns about this plan, but the first step for that is to find a spacefaring vessel of some sort on Eberron, which I have since discovered is difficult because Eberron is kind of weirdly cut off from the Astral Sea. Kind of stuck in the doldrums where nothing happens, and then it's also like the planet itself is surrounded by rings of tiny glowing crystalline chunks of rock.
Oh.
And when those fall to the Earth, then they become Eberron and the other type, Sybaris, dragon shards.
Oh. Okay.
So getting off the planet is going to be its own whole thing. Finding a spell jammer in that world is going to be its own whole thing. And then we get to do adventures out on the Astral Sea, which is both exciting and fucking weird.
No, it's brilliant, though, because you have found a source book that helps you do all that, right?
No.
Chris?
No.
Chris, no?
It doesn't. Okay, so first of all, like we're in Canada, and everything in Canada is more expensive than anywhere else.
That's true.
And so I went to my local nerd store, and I purchased a 3-book, 1 DM screen set for Spelljammer for $100.
Okay.
And it is not super helpful.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh,
what
no.
has happened?
There's a lot of stuff that's just missing from the book. A lot of stuff that I would hope would be present in a book about going to space and doing space things and in a setting that was originally conceived as the way you get from one setting to another setting.
Okay.
Because originally, Spelljammer was how you got from Greyhawk to the Forgotten Realms and back. Right? And they've got, like, star maps and shit for all of this.
Yeah.
The book that I have doesn't actually tell you how to get to any of those settings and what any of those settings are like.
Oh, no.
There is literally only one passage about one of the established settings in, and I mean, I haven't read all of the books. Maybe there's more and I just haven't seen them yet. But the only one that I have come across reading through these books so far is a note telling me that Kryn is roughly 16 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than the rest of the universe.
That's not very helpful.
It is not super helpful. So, I am $100 poorer, and I'm still going to have to make it up.
That seems like a waste of $100.
It feels a little bit like a waste of $100. Other than, like, I got to show it off to my friends, like, it feels a little bit like buying some bling and, like, wearing it out, and then all your friends are like, ah, dang, look what you got. That's what I got for these books, is I put them on my table where people could see them, and some of my friends went, ah, cool, you got Spelljammer, and they got really excited about going to space, and now I'm still going to have to make it all up.
Yeah, so, and maybe this is a unique experience for me, but in the past, when I have acquired source books, they did all the making up for me.
That is very much a unique experience, Josh. I don't think
is that not the traditional configuration where I like look at a source book and I'm like, wow, look at all the work they did crafting this cool place. I'm certainly looking forward to going there. And then I like got to do that.
Sometimes. I mean, a lot of the setting specific source books that I've picked up over time are lacking in some of that information. Like, there are some source books that I've picked up that are absolutely like that. Some of the 3.5 books in particular were absolutely masterful with that.
Right.
I just looked over at my 3.5 books, and Cityscape is absolutely one of the best purchases I've ever made. Because it has everything that you could ever want about making and populating and living in cities in Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay.
And then I'm also looking over at my fourth edition books. And the Adventurer's Vault was just a bunch of random shit that they smashed together.
Oh, right. I do remember that.
Yeah, it's just a book full of like odds and ends that they smashed together for like character options or whatever. And there's some value to that, for sure.
Some,
Some.
Yeah, I have a vague sense memory of this.
Yeah, let's see what else I got going on over here. The Wheel of Time role-playing game. Absolutely fantastic.
Is it?
Yeah, it really was.
All right, fine.
Now, the 3.5 version of Wheel of Time had one of my favorite magic systems for D&D in it. Like, they went to some pretty big lengths to change around the Vancian magic system to actually work with Robert Jordan's weaving.
Oh, okay.
And it's fucking dope. And also, you can play an Ogier.
What is an Ogier?
An Ogier is a 7.5 foot tall, thick like a tree ogre guy who...
Oh,
yeah, if you were a like pacifist book reading dork.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, it's you.
Yeah.
No, they're great. They're some of my favorite characters from the books, and I was really looking forward to being able to play them.
And you can't.
No, I can. I just can't play them in D&D 5th edition.
Oh, I see. That sucks. I feel sorry for you. Sorry, I didn't mean that like in like a weird way, but like,
yeah, no, you've been kind of saying everything in a weird way. I feel like I'm like talking to somebody who is only half listening to a conversation, Josh.
Sorry, I don't like. Okay, we talked about this earlier this week, and I was like, oh yeah, it sucks that their books suck so bad. But like, I haven't cracked any 5th edition books outside of like the core three. Like, at all.
Really?
Yeah. I took a brief glance at the book for what is it? Oh, there's like a Temple of Elemental Evil kind of type adventure thing.
Oh, yeah.
That we were running like 5 years ago. And that's it. because I, maybe I just like, maybe I'm just changing how I interact with 5th edition, but all of the stuff I've been using for 5th edition that's not just like core rulebook has either been fully made up, which is like hooray, good, whatever, or I just like grabbed something for free off of like other people's publications.
Right.
Because I'm just like not, well, first of all, further to your problem here, I don't feel like I need the 5th edition source books for a lot of this stuff. Because I still have my 4th edition ones. Mm-hmm. And all of the fluffy stuff that I cared about is in there.
Right.
And then the crunchy stuff, I can either use your evil trick of ChatGPT-ing it, or or I can just make up.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I just want to like look in the monster manual and be like, that's a cool monsters, and use that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like, so far there's been no reason for me to crack open those books, even the ones that are, like, crunchier, like Tasha's or, like, the other ones like that. All of that stuff, if I want to use it, is available for free.
See, my problem with Tasha's and the Volo's Guide,
yeah,
and actually, like, a lot of the 5th edition publications so far, is that it's very much the Adventurer's Vault, where it's just a whole bunch,
yeah,
of stuff that they've crammed together into a book that doesn't really have like a cohesive theme around it.
Right.
It's just, here's a bunch of options. And that's great.
Yeah.
Like, there is a place for that, for sure. But like, so many of the 5th edition publications so far have been that it's a little hard for me to warrant making those purchases. Like, I did pick up the Volo's Guide. Mostly because my son and I went to a nerd store and I had the intention of buying a book that would be helpful, and I bought a book and it was not helpful. There's a bit of a theme with my 5th edition book so far.
Well, and here, the other problem for me too specifically is like, so if we look specifically at Volvo's, it's a mm-hmm. guide to everything, which also kind of means it's a guide to nothing. They put a little bit of whatever in there, but there's nothing to draw me like to us. Like, okay, so I, for whatever reason, wind up playing a lot of divine characters. Mm-hmm. There's no like divine power book for 5th edition. It's just
right.
like, hey, you like divine characters? Here's a bunch of background options just for you. You should buy these. You know,
right.
There's one new option, I think, for each class.
Okay.
Which is whatever. And then a bunch of just like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I don't care about the blah, 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 blah.
And I wonder if that's like, I do wonder what the publishing decisions are behind that. Like, do they have good data that says that their blah, blah, blah books are the ones that sell the best? Because if that's the case, then I can probably just safely stop buying D&D 5th edition books.
Yeah.
But,
well, I mean, I think there's other reasons for that right now, but
but like the 3rd edition books, I know had a bit of a problem with too much content too fast.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like when I was selling 3rd edition books, and I was like right at the tail end of the 3rd edition 3.5 thing. Like,
yeah.
I think there were 3 or 4 years left in the product before we started the switch towards 4.
Yeah.
The biggest problem with getting 3.5 books off the shelves is that there was almost always a third party alternative that had already done the thing that the 3rd edition book was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the 3rd edition book did it better, to be fair. Like,
yeah.
Third party publishers tended to be a little on the like spaghetti at the wall style of book development, but there was just so much 3rd edition, and I'm wondering if the streamlining in 4th edition that we saw with some of their products, and then the further streamlining that we've seen towards like a very specific type of product is a result of that.
I really wish I could get my hands on some sales data to see like how those specific power source books sold compared to, like, yeah, Tasha's or Volo's or whatever. Because I have a feeling, and this is just, like, anecdotal from the people that I play with regularly and I've talked to, that, like, I know one person who bought Tasha's out of everyone that I know. And when we were playing fourth, everyone I know had bought at least one power book.
Well, I mean, you buy the power book for the class that you're interested in, but I think that's part of the problem for Wizards,
right,
is that, like, you're buying the book for the powers that you're interested in, but that means that at a table of six people, you've got one person buying that book. You don't have six people buying that book.
But here's the reality, though, is when you do an approach like Tasha's, where there's way more in that book you're not interested in, now you have a table of six people buying zero books.
Right.
Because they just go online and they find the one tiny part of the book they were interested in and fuck the rest. Like, at least before, each of them bought one book. Maybe not the same book, but they bought one book. And now they bought zero books.
Well, and it is interesting, too, that, like, a lot of the character options that are out there, you can just look at on the SRD.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was. It was the bard ability, like the bard spell that lets you take back the last 5 seconds of stuff you said.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
It came from the Acquisitions Incorporated book, which I have no intention of buying. But
right.
It's from that book, but I still have access to the spell through the compendium online.
Right.
So I don't really have a reason to buy that book if the only thing that I'm interested in is a couple of the spells.
Right. There's nothing there for you.
So I do wonder if, because like I recall there being a much more like DM-centric sales strategy early on, where like to the point that like a lot of DMs were getting frustrated with the fact that they had 8,000 books to buy at any given point.
Right.
But I wonder if that had more or less impact on sales. Like, you had somebody at the table who was going to be consistently picking up books.
But, like, are they? Like,
but
so...
are they? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, looking at just the way our tables broke down back in 4th edition, yes, there was less books being bought by individual players, but more books, I think, got sold overall. They seem to have found a better way to target, like... So, I think one thing that was brilliant as far as sales go was putting things out like the Mordenkainen's Emporium and stuff like that,
right,
where because the game itself was more based around magic items, you were encouraged to look up and plan for certain magic items to suggest things to your DM because it was such a core part of your build. Now, like, they don't even put magic items in the player's handbook, which blows my mind that they don't even talk about them. Like,
well, we've talked before about how like fucking weird it is that they don't even talk about the economy, right? Like, but the buying, the gold piece value for a one, like a plus one sword, right? Like, that is such a different approach to the way that magic items have been handled in previous editions.
Well, and I think that speaks to them. Okay, someone at WotC got it in their heads that the only people who buy books are DMs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided to triple down on selling information to DMs for these campaigns. And I guess just hoping that the DMs would drag the rest of the table along with them.
But then information I fucking need.
Well, that's exactly the problem, is that they had an idea and then they botched the execution.
I need to know how we're supposed to leave the atmosphere of Eberron.
Right.
How does that happen? Right.
Yeah.
And like, are there skill checks that I should be doing? Is there a usual way that these things run? And it came with an adventure, and I'm sure that there's a bunch of stuff in the adventure that I can like plumb for stuff, but I don't want to run their fucking adventure. I want to run my fucking
adventure. Well, absolutely. You shouldn't have to run their adventure to teach yourself how the game works for like a specific variant. Like, all of that should be laid out pretty clearly in the source book, because you need, like, it feels like they don't want buy-in from the rest of the table. They want buy-in from the DM who's going to, like, then, you know, suck people into this wonderful world they've created. And it felt like previous editions were much more about everyone at the table being as invested in the game as the DM was.
Right.
Like, they've had this, like, cultural shift towards, like, actually this table belongs to the DM and you are guests here, as opposed to, like, this is collaborative and we're all invested in creating this world together because, you know, we want to play as this, like, group of friends, maybe not the same characters, but in the same setting for years and years.
Yeah. All right. So, in your opinion, I want to get back on the topic of, like, source books in specific.
Sure. Sure.
In your opinion, what makes a good source book versus a mediocre or a bad one?
So, for me, a good source book is, so I feel like it's not a straight 50-50 fluff versus crunch. I think a source book should actually lean a little heavier on crunch than fluff. Because there's lots of opportunities for fluff outside of the source book in that setting. Like, unless you're introducing an absolutely brand new setting that no one's ever done before, then you might need more fluff. But I think that what you need to do is firmly establish how to operate that setting or those new options within your campaign. Right? So, like you said, if you're running Spelljammer, that Spelljammer needs to have a lot of specifics about how those ships work and how entering and exiting atmospheres works and all that kind of other stuff.
Yeah.
At least if it doesn't have like explicit rules, it clarifies in a significant way why or why not there would be a rule. Right? So like it might not have a rule specific to Eberron, but it will have generalized rules for entering and exiting atmospheres based on what atmosphere you can expect in a setting. And then it's up to you to kind of like gauge and apply the correct one, right?
See, I kind of go in the opposite direction. I think that like I want my source books to have a lot of fluff, but vague fluff. Right?
Okay.
Like I want to have like what makes the realm space different from Kryn space, different from Gray space. But I don't necessarily want all of the blanks filled in.
Okay.
Right? So I want like broad strokes for like what I can expect in various areas so that I can, one, get inspired by that fluff to go and do my own thing within the spaces that are still there.
Yeah.
And two, so that I have enough information that if one of my players is like, no, that's not how the realms go, I can actually point at a book and be like, no, shut the fuck up, that's how the realms go. Right? Like, the amount of fluff and the type of fluff that I need is kind of different from a source book than it would be from, I don't know, like a core book for a setting.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So, like, by way of example, I'm going to draw on this again because I just have it. But, like, when they did 4th edition, Eberron, it was two books, right? Or the Forgotten Realms were two books. Dark Sun was two books.
Yep.
There was a setting guide and then like a campaign guide or something like that, right?
Yeah, I didn't think that was enough books.
Okay.
I feel like I know that setting specific books don't usually do as well in the sales, and like I understand why Wizards wouldn't necessarily want to go in that direction, but for me, I want a source book on the Sword Coast. Right? Like I want to know more about the Sword Coast and like what's going on there and what makes it special and who is who is hobnobbing around in there and what is like Undermountain up to and all of that bullshit. Right. It doesn't have to be complete. I want a broad overview of what is going on in the world there.
So you want like region-specific source books, like maybe smaller books, but more of them.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what I would be looking for. Like I do want more of the 3rd edition style splat books that they were putting out, because like the Forgotten Realms got like 35 books. That's an exaggeration. I don't actually know how many books they got, but they got quite a few books for all of the different areas of the Forgotten Realms. And then like Greyhawk had like 5 books, which is too many books for Greyhawk. And then like Dragonlance, they actually went and got the license for Dragonlance to Margaret Weiss's company. And she was just allowed to make as many books as she wanted. And I feel like that's a better way to flesh out settings, so that if there is one part of that world that people are more interested than others, they have the opportunity to like grab onto that and like dig into it more.
See, what I worry is that this may be something like particular to you.
Oh, absolutely.
Granularity.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Like I feel like the approach of like, instead of individual splat books, just have like significant chapters in a larger book is probably more generally popular. But I do agree that like, if they need to put, I think just like more options out there for how much of the content you want to pick up at any given time. Like,
yeah. And then like it's kind of weird too. Cause like for Eberron in specific, one of the things that I always find weird is the focus on one city.
Yeah.
Right, so like, the Forgotten Realms is the Sword Coast, and then the realms everyone forgot.
Right.
You've got your Baldur's Gates and your Neverwinters, and that's it. And then I don't actually know if Neverwinter's on the Sword Coast. Where the fuck is Neverwinter?
I don't, dude. Don't ask me. I'm not a geography guy.
I also just don't care about the realms.
I
never adventured there. I've been playing Baldur's Gate.
Where is Neverwinter? It's in Faerûn.
Okay, that is the Forgotten Realms.
Fictional city-state on the northwest coast.
Okay.
There you go.
Faerûn is the name of the world.
No. Faerûn is a... Where was it? Neverwinter is a fictional city-state. It's a subcontinent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's on the northwest coast.
Neat.
There you go.
Yeah, but like the urge to make like one specific spot within the world the important one, is one that I've always kind of shied away from. Like, Eberron has probably one of the coolest, weirdest countries that I've seen before, and that's Karn, which uses undead as their labor force.
Right.
So,
which is like awesome idea.
Awesome idea, but also kind of squicky, because like, how long should they be dead before we put them back to work?
20 minutes. No, I get it though. Like, in a setting where magical like resuscitation is not just like possible, but fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long do you give people to grieve? Or like, you know, like, is there a statute of limitations on identification of a body before, like, the state can claim it for the labor force?
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I also appreciate that they are taking work away from, like, people and allowing them more leisure time, because you don't need to have humans doing a bunch of mining work.
Correct,
We have the undead for that.
And that was the dream of computers, right?
Yeah. Now AI is only taking jobs away from artists. But like,
art's not a real job.
But there isn't a Karn source book.
Right.
Right. There's nowhere for me to like delve into their philosophy or their like, I know vaguely who their nobility is because he's a vampire.
Right.
And like, that's fun. But there's like nothing that I can really dig into for like what that country is, unless I make it
right
up, which I'm fine doing, but I would love to have some direction, some more direction than I have right now for that.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, like, I've had that sort of inspirational need, like back when I was putting together a Dark Sun campaign, and I was like the one thing that they were really great about was describing like the capital city of each of the like sorcerer kings.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else, they're just like, there be dragons. Like,
it's a fucking desert. What do you want?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, well, it's not all desert, is it? And they're like, I don't know, kind of.
pretty much, yeah. So, yeah, no, for me, I like to have setting-specific books, for sure.
Right.
If I am going to have, like, a specific type of source book that has, like, a lot of the character options and stuff in it,
right.
I'd love for it to be around a theme. Right? Like,
oh, okay,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like you were saying, with, like, having a divine source book. Right, like,
yeah, yeah,
having all of that divine stuff in one place. If I know I'm going to be using divine stuff in my campaign, if I know my character is going to be a divine character, love to have that information that I can lean on.
Right.
And then, yeah, like the crunchy bits, I can kind of take or leave because I'm not a person who has system mastery a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like 5th edition, I am not very good at 5th edition D&D. I know the basic rules. But when it starts getting into the nitty-gritties and we start getting like rules lawyery with it, I am not good. I'm a lot better at 4th and significantly better than 4th at 3rd. So.
Right. Yeah, I get you on that.
One thing that I thought was really weird that they didn't have in the Spelljammer book was shipbuilding rules.
Yeah.
Like, I am currently in the process of making those up, stealing them almost wholesale from Wildsea.
Okay.
Because Wildsea has a great system for collaboratively creating your ship.
Oh, okay.
So you get a number of points per player character that you spend as a group, and then each of you has a few points that you can spend on stuff that you want for yourself.
Okay.
And then they have a whole schwack of various options that you can use for your ship. And some of them are, like, mutually exclusive, so, like, only...
Right.
You kind of have to agree on, like, what the hull is made of.
Yeah.
But if it's really, really important to your character that we have a kitchen and nobody else is willing to put points into a kitchen, you can put one of your own points into a kitchen.
Right. Well, so let's, like, I wanted to grab on that idea there of, like, lacking information. Because, like, something you brought up to me earlier today that I didn't even fully realize, because, I haven't, like, really dug into the books, weirdly enough. But, like, there's a lot of information right now that is being hidden from players like the DMG or other places that, like, I feel should be a lot more transparent.
Well, we were talking about my lack of system mastery, and like, I opened up the Spelljammer source book and I was looking at the GIF, who are my favorite race of all time, giant hippo people, and there was a note about them having a racial proficiency with firearms.
Yeah.
And so I started looking through the source book, trying to figure out, like, where the hell are the guns? Right. Like,
yeah.
I need the chart with the guns so that I can, like, deal with the gun. No, the guns aren't there. The guns aren't in the player's handbook. The guns are in one of the optional sections of the DMG.
Which to me is a baffling place to put them. Like, if you told me guns were not in the PHB basic, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. They're kind of setting specific. But to tell me that they're not in, like, one of the main settings that introduces firearms at all is just kind of mind-boggling.
I think they might have some magic guns. I don't actually have the books with me there at work, but
yeah.
But
like, the rules for them aren't there, right?
No, the rules are in the DMG.
Which is wacky to me.
It's wacky, and it also feels really strange that, like, you would... I get why you would want to have them in a core book, but put them in the PHB.
Yeah,
The rest of the weapons.
Yeah, well, exactly. Hey, by the way, here's some optional weapons. You're going to have to talk to your DM about this. You don't get them for free. I can understand the thought process of why you just didn't give them to every player right off the hop. But maybe, I mean, hey, maybe PHB 2, PHB 3. they've like done it before.
They've done it before, but they're never doing it again.
Why do you have to take my hope?
I mean, you wouldn't buy it anyway, so. No, it's just like, chair broke. Putting a laser gun in the PHB static as just like a thing your character can buy, probably not the best plan.
Terrible idea.
Like, at the very least, have some additional support for them in a setting book about that thing.
Yeah, but then like also like, I don't know, this is weird to me too, because like, now that I think about it, the Rime of the Frostmaiden that we're running gives you laser pistols.
Right.
What, I didn't know those were a possibility until I was handed one.
Yep, they're in the Dungeon Master's Guide.
Yeah, no idea they were out there. No idea how to handle it. Is that the experience you want me to have? Is just like fumbling with something until it goes off and I lose a foot?
I mean, a little bit.
I mean, yes, a little bit, but
not always, but like in certain circumstances, for sure. I do think that there is something to be said for having those hidden away in the Dungeon Master's Guide, but like there's a bunch of other stuff that really shouldn't be.
Right, right.
And a bunch of stuff.
I mean, magic items, like they should not be hidden.
Some of them should.
No. Some should, but like the general concept of magic items should not be hidden.
Except that 5th edition seems to be a little bit allergic to them.
Yeah, and I feel like it's an overcorrection from 4th.
Yeah.
They're like, oh god, we made our whole rule set about magic items. Well, no more magic items.
Well, and they haven't given us prices or an economy that we can deal with the magic items.
No.
They've tried really hard to kind of shy away from
anything fun. You're right.
Yeah, lots of things that are fun, but like there's no magic item creation rules.
Right. Well, there isn't even like rules for creation of like better types of armor, really.
Oh no, they took the crafting rules right out.
Yeah, like they're just gone.
Which is unfortunate, because like crafting and profession rules in 3rd edition were great for fleshing out your character a bit, right? Like you're in town, you don't have anything that you have to do right this minute. Grab a hammer at the local smith and make some horseshoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And it helped tie characters into, like, you know, a backstory. Because, like, they have these things in, like, the optional backgrounds where it's like, oh, yeah, you were an artisan, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, cool, I can do these things. They're like, well, yeah. And you're like, well, how? And they're like, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah, how do I make a basket weaving check?
Yeah, right? Like, exactly.
Is that a performance? Do I do? Because that's the only like skill that still applies from those sets.
Maybe I could probably intimidate the reeds into making a basket.
I would love to watch a half-orc just like screaming at a river. And then somebody walks up and they're like, what are you doing? Basket weaving.
Fishing.
Fishy, 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 fishy.
Well, and that's the hilarious part. It's like, the ape character, like his background is in jewel making. I have no idea how to actually go around like attempting to make a piece of jewelry with that character. Well, exactly.
Yeah, because if you could make jewelry, then you could sell it, and that would break the fragile economy that doesn't have any prices on the magic items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the economy that doesn't exist and is based entirely on bartering.
So no, like that was another weirdness from the Eberron setting, was like the lack of mercantilism that we would see from a setting where so much of what they're doing is like so much of what magic is doing is considered mundane.
Right.
Right. Like you have people who are mage rites and their whole job is making magic stuff. There should be some accommodations for that in the setting somewhere.
And you just would have thought.
There just really aren't.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like the I had a thought, and now it's gone.
That's okay. We're back to salty Josh hours. So
fantastic. But yeah, so what makes a bad source book? Like, what's the worst source book that you've ever picked up, and why was it terrible?
The worst source book I ever picked up.
I have to grab mine. Just a sec. I can't remember the name.
Yeah, I don't have the luxury of having mine in front of me. They're in a shed right now. But I'm tempted to go with the God, what's the name of it? I keep wanting to call it the Shadow Realm, but I know that's not correct.
Oh, the Shadowfell?
Yeah, the Shadowfell sourcebook from 4th edition.
Was that bad?
I felt Shadowfell was not good.
Oh. I never picked that one up.
Well, good thing you missed it.
Good thing. Well, so what made that one bad?
So, it had fluff, but like useless fluff, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, the Shadowfell is dark and spooky. You're like, yeah, no shit. And then I was like, okay, well, is there like anything that I can do about that? And they're like, nope. Like, okay. Like there's some campaign materials in a weird box and a small, like, it was a soft cover book.
Which is like, yeah, those little floppy ones that they put out.
Yeah. Here's your Shadowfell pamphlet. And never mind like the weak fluff, there was almost no crunch to like do anything with.
Right.
There's like a little bit, and this was, so I think the biggest problem too is that this was right around where they were trying to bring in that like essentials stuff and like actually bump things down a bit. And they went too far.
Yeah, I can't say as I loved the essentials line for like a lot of reasons.
Oh, so many reasons. It was not good. That was like kind of their last desperate kick at the can, I think, for 4th edition, just to like revive it a bit.
Which was too bad, because I think they were really hoping for like a 3.5 style boost.
Yeah. Because
like when 3.5 came out, that was like fire under the ass for a lot of people.
Right. And I think what I hated about Essentials is that it stripped away the cool customization from 4th and was just like, what if we dumbed down your characters like a lot?
Yeah, instead of, like, adding anything new, it was mostly taking stuff away.
Yeah, it's like all your characters, all your clerics are now dumb battle clerics. Every one of them. Right? All right, I guess.
So the worst source book that I have ever picked up was Niambe, African Adventures.
Oh, this sounds rife with
controversial
issues.
It's very 2002.
Okay, that says a lot right there.
Yep, so it is a 2002 3.5 third-party source book.
Third-party, even better.
Yeah, third-party.
No editorial constraints. Did they just call it Darkest Africa? Like,
I mean, it's pretty close. I don't want to say anything specific because it would possibly be slander, but it feels very much like white people writing Africa. And
it sounds like white people writing Africa. Yeah.
It's a lot of white people writing Africa. So I am disappointed in that purchase.
I bet.
Okay, sorry.
Title alone steers me away from it. Why did you pick it up?
I picked it up primarily because it was a setting I hadn't seen people use effectively before. Right? Like the continent of Africa is full of fantastic ideas for adventures. I mean, it's where Egypt is. Like, there's a lot of shit going on there that is very cool for adventurers. And then you've also got like sprawling ancient empires that have just suddenly disappeared. And you've got a huge variety of peoples and languages that are very interesting and kind of cool. Like the Bantu language has hundreds of variations that can basically kind of understand each other. And so you have like a huge swath of Africa where a whole bunch of people speak distinct languages, but they can all more or less understand one another when they're talking, unless they're two dialects that are really separated. Right. So there's a lot of really cool things that would make Africa a fantastic setting for a role-playing game. Mm-hmm. My issues with it came from the fact that it isn't actually Africa.
Right. It's like...
It's fantasy like a, Africa like a, written by white people.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, like, a colonialist's vision of Africa?
Well, I don't... I do think that whoever was writing it was doing their best to be sensitive to issues of colonialism. And, okay. like, I do think that there were some very 2002 attempts at recognizing how problematic that was going to be.
Okay.
But it was very 2002, and so reading through it now is kind of painful.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it's not great. And what would have been much better, I feel, would have been like an actual source book covering probably not all of Africa, because Africa is a really big place.
Well, I was going to say, like, the kind of person who publishes a source book for Africa, the whole place, like...
Well, and like,
it doesn't sound like they're treating things with a lot of nuance. Like,
so much of it is just like fantasy Kenya,
right? Yeah,
right. Like all of the stereotypes that you get for like a Kenyan adventure is kind of what happens for the whole book.
Right.
You're not going to see with like sprinkles of other stuff that people are. Like, people in North America are generally aware of in Africa. So, like, you have your Zulu, your fantasy Zulus, right? Like, they scraped the filing numbers off of the Zulu nation and just made them into a fantasy thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure they did that in a very culturally sensitive and well-researched manner, too, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I picked that one up because I do have an interest in having different influences in my role playing games. Like, I do want to pull from different places. I would love to see a lot more Afrocentric role playing games and role playing game supplement stuff come out.
Yeah,
I just they really need to be written by Black
Africans.
People. Yeah,
not Black people. Africans, like specifically Africans.
Yeah. Or at the very least, like people who are like very, very familiar with Africa. And I didn't get the impression that the author of this book was very, very familiar with Africa.
No, it sounds like a guy kind of tried to make a role-playing supplement just based around like child soldiers and marathon running or something. Like, it's guy who it sounds like a guy's like, I have heard of deep dark Africa, perhaps I'll run into Dr. Livingstone and create a role-playing supplement for him. And then it's like, oh yeah, no, you just made like a super racist stereotype of Africa into fantasy Africa. Thanks.
Yeah. I don't know, I kind of feel like the racism is again very like 2002 trying not to be racism.
Yeah, it's just a book full of microaggressions.
Yeah, and like not a lot of like real hard consideration for how colonialism and like a history of having been taken over and exploited
right
would turn into a book about a place that is kind of exploitative.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they didn't even think to have Egypt as like its own distinct book is a little.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think they even have like an Egypt section in here.
Okay.
Let me see.
So going. This is Egyptian erasure.
Well, I mean, Egypt is just supposed to be like the Middle East, right? Egypt is its own thing. It's Europe, basically.
Wait, Egypt is African Europe?
Don't quote me on that. But like,
yeah, I won't.
Yeah, no. Looking at the book, I'm not seeing anything that suggests that Egypt is even involved.
Which is also wild to just like carve off such an important part of Africa.
Yeah, but I think like for adventuring purposes, they considered it distinct, right? Like you've got a very different kind of exploitation that happens right. in Egypt versus like sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah. Well, it's, so, okay. So like, this is now where I, like, I'm coming over to your side of the argument of we need more like source books that narrow in specifically, right?
Oh, like, for sure.
You could have Saharan Africa, you could have the Congo, you could have Egypt, you could have like South Africa and the coasts. Like,
yep.
They need more than one book that covers a massive continent.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of just a problem that we have with like the Western understanding of Africa in general.
Yeah.
I sat in on a bunch of really cool African history courses when one of my ex-girlfriends was going to the University of Alberta. And one of the things that I found really interesting and horrible about that was at the time, and I can't speak for what the program is looking like now, but at that time it was African and Asian studies.
Oh, no.
So we're just going to combine two whole ass continents and teach the broadest possible history of those two continents that we can. It was like the education that was being taught in the African courses was very interesting, but very sparse.
Uh-huh.
And like, I wanted to know so much more than I was able to get from these courses that I was sitting in on and did not pay for.
From the courses that combined like the two largest continents into one class.
I mean, to its credit, is it to its credit? No. African history was its own course.
Okay.
Asian history was its own course. But again, like, how do you compare the history of Kenya with the history of Congo?
They're
vastly different.
And then how do you compare the history of the Congo with the history of, like, Taiwan?
Well, exactly, right? And so the fact that they just, like, mashed these things together, I think, is kind of a bigger systemic issue for how Westerners view Africa and Asia. So I don't super blame Chris Dolent. That's the name that's on the front of the book.
Oh, I was going to say, who the hell is Chris Dolent?
Yeah. For like taking some broad strokes with stuff, and I forgive him his 2002 sensibilities on things, but it's not a very useful source book.
No, no, that's an understatement if I've ever heard one.
So yeah, a bit more research there, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it. And you know what? Like I always say about, you know, from Mark Rosewater's talk, sometimes you need the bad source books to show you what the good ones are.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.